Welcome to the Seven Figure Leaders podcast. This podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners, and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co and click podcast. And there you'll find the link to apply. Welcome. And today we've got Jeremy Middleton, who was co-founder of HomeServe and now runs a family office where he looks to invest in small and medium-sized businesses to help them grow and then one day exit. So welcome, Jeremy.
Hi, glad to be here.
So best place to start, as we were talking about before we pressed the live button, perhaps you could run us through the early days of what it was like to be part of the founding team of HomeServe.
Yeah, sure. Well, Richard and I worked together. We were employees at Procter & Gamble, living in Newcastle-on-Tyne. But we both knew we wanted to get into business together. We didn't know what. But we had a determination to do it. We both quit Procter & Gamble and went into consultancy looking for ideas. And then we both separately actually bought a buy-to-let house. And in those days, you could borrow 100% of the money. Guess what that meant? If you filled it full of tenants, you had a free house. So we decided to do it together. And we built up a small portfolio of properties whilst we were still working for other people. And because we were owning and running a number of buy-to-lets, we set up a letting agency, hired someone to help us. And then because we were doing that, we started managing other people's properties, and it all started to get a bit busy. And so first of all, Richard left, and then 18 months later, I left. And we then set up a series of other businesses, related markets. It could be property investment, could be property cleaning. One was property repairs. We had this business called Fast Fix that would do exactly what it says on the tin. Guys in yellow vans go out and fix things quickly, and mainly servicing the properties from our own property letting agency. However, that was achieving quite a lot of volume sales, but it wasn't making any money, so we were losing money. And we looked around for ways to develop the business and came across, all the water companies and said, you're privatized, you're all looking at going into plumbing services, why don't we help you? And we got a consultancy contract from one of them to go and assess their plumbing business, and we told them it's a terrible idea. You've got this idea of having a small regional directly employed plumbing business, an ordinary one. We suggest you need to have a national emergency focused plumbing business, probably franchised, and that'll be a great business. But what you need, Mr. Water Company, is some entrepreneurs. So you need to buy yourself one. And guess what? We've got one. Long the short of it is, we did a joint venture with the water company. And for a couple of years after that, Richard moved down to be CEO of that company, my business partner. And he grew a small loss-making plumbing business into a big loss-making plumbing business, which wasn't the plan.
So just pause there. So the water company you approached,
yeah,
is this one of the national water companies?
It's a regional. South Staffs Water, based in Staffordshire. About 50,000 households they had at that time.
And so you approached your
Yeah, we approached them. Suggested the area of interest
to as the plumber, basically, as their plumbers.
Yes, effectively. So we formed a joint venture with them to do plumbing, which we did for a couple of years, and grew volume because they had money and a brand, but didn't grow profits because it just wasn't a good enough model. Saw what another water company was doing, which is offering insurance against plumbing leaks, effectively the AA for the home on plumbing.
Yeah.
We copied it, developed it, and expanded it. And that worked extremely well and grew into the very cash generative home serve business. And that grew for 30 years until to hit FTSE 100 status.
Wow. Okay. And that model that you're talking about is homeowners paying a fixed monthly subscription so that if they ever have a problem with their plumbing, then they have a plumber who can come around and look at it on.
Yeah. Broadly. Yeah. Broadly it is. Yes. Yeah. Once we had a model that we knew people wanted and we were able to fulfill it because we did have good plumbers in the network, then it was a question of marketing. Yeah. And getting the right message at the right price across, and doing deals with other affinity partners, i.e. marketing it under the names of other water companies. And indeed, eventually, doing joint ventures with water companies to do the same thing all over the world.
And why do you think the initial model that you approached the first water company with, why was that the wrong model? Why didn't it work?
Because we haven't changed the model. It was plumbing contracting. And you've got to advertise to find your jobs, go out and quote for them, send somebody you've paid to go and fix the job, make sure the customer's happy, send them a bill, collect the money. Yeah. And that's all possible to do, but you're doing it with quite a lot of overheads compared to the local plumbing contractor. So it's quite hard to do, at least at the stage and skills that we had. But if you turn that round and use the same service to offer to sell peace of mind, not so much to the 16% of people who have plumbing emergencies, but to the 84% of people who don't, and they send you a check at the beginning of the year, then that's a much better proposition from a cash point of view. And those who have a claim are very happy because, hey, it got sorted. I'm glad I bought that. And those who don't think, well, do I want to cancel it? Maybe I'll have a problem next year.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm simplifying, but broadly, that's the type of dynamic. It's the same service. We'll come out and fix something, but marketed in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. Brilliant. And so in those early days, so you're not a plumber and nor...
No. Neither is Richard.
Neither is Richard. So why did that first water company listen to you and why were they open to giving you a chance?
We were looking for ideas and we didn't say, why don't you want to buy our plumbing business? I was separately running a consultancy business and I pitched them as, you are newly privatized, you're looking for ideas. We have a particular expertise because we have this sister company that is a plumbing contracting companies, and we've got lots of ideas for you. Why don't you employ us as consultants to assess the market for you, which we then did, and came up with a recommendation I refer you to earlier.
I see. Okay, brilliant. And so what was your role as the business then grew and as it progressed over the next 30 years? What did your role in the business look like?
Yeah. Well, Richard and I had started off as equal partners. But he, after the deal with South Staffs, he moved down as MD. I may have owned the same shareholding in him at the time, but he was the CEO. I was his advisor and a non-exec. And I remained a non-exec for 30 years. When we were a very small business, we would take a lot of joint decisions. And by the time we got to be a big business, he had lots of very talented, well-paid managers, and I didn't add a lot of value. And I, over the years, sold down my equity shareholdings in that. I didn't sell out. I was more an advisor than anything by the end, but it was a fascinating journey to go on.
Wow. Very exciting. And have you been involved in other ventures along the way?
Yes, lots.
Okay. Anyway, talk about whichever you want to.
When I started to sell down, I continued running my consultancy business. I did that in two or three versions. After a period of time, I recognized it was a revenue generating model, but not easy to create capital value out of it. So I switched from advising companies towards backing the best companies.
Yeah.
And I would have done all sorts of different types of investments, from business angel investments, from early stage tech, to following the advice of lots of financial institutions. But probably I have invested in 50 plus private companies at one time or another. And I've ended up formulating a view of what I was better at, which is what I do now. I run my family office, which is using our own funds, but we run a business which we call Growth Capital. We look to back small to medium-sized enterprises at a particular stage when they have proved their business model, got an established business. They are profitable, probably making something around £500,000 a year. And we seek to take a minority share and partner with them to go on the journey up to 5 million. At that stage, a proven entrepreneur may have a business worth 5 million, it might be worth 10 million, but they may or may not have got much money on it. But if they can make that stage, they can evolve and scale up to the level that I'm describing. Suddenly their business might be worth 30 or 40 or 50 million.
Yeah.
And that is life-changing for them, but also life-changing for their employees and the whole future. So we're looking at a particular stage, and then we're looking to do a particular type of investment. So we would offer, it's our own capital. We only want straight equity. We want to be on the same basis as the entrepreneur. Been an entrepreneur many times in setting up early stage businesses. Comfortable sometimes to offer secondaries. I took them myself, and that can be important to de-risk the entrepreneur and to give them the confidence to go on the journey.
And just to clarify, so secondary for anyone listening is when they're to raise additional capital is for the founder or the owner to sell some of their shares. Yeah.
Yeah. We buy existing shareholders out sometimes. Now funds, venture capital funds, private equity funds, generally are less interested in doing that. They can't get EIS for their investors. They would tend to think they only want to put the money into growth capital. We also happy to do smaller amounts of money and to do little and often. In fact, I'd normally advise an entrepreneur selling to take only a small share to start with, because you'll get to know us and we'll get to know you. And we'll always buy more later if it works at a better price. So we'll often do smaller amounts initially than a fund would like to do. And we'll do them more regularly because you may not need so much money, but you may want more later. And perhaps the biggest difference of all is we haven't raised money from third parties and have therefore got to return it to them.
Yeah.
That can lead to the whole psychology of, oh, you've got to sell after 3, 4, 5 years. And that can lead to growing too fast or taking too much risk because they're trying to drive really hard growth. And I'm a believer in trying to find a simple business I can understand, a predictable business that you can see can compound consistently into the future and try and have a sensible, cautious approach to development. So there are, I'm not going to be investing in the next Amazon, Google, or we're not claiming to be Mr. Musk, but we are planning to try and offer the best type of capital at a particular stage for businesses and entrepreneurs who want to go on that journey to scale up.
Okay, well, that's brilliant. And is there a particular sector? So you said it's not the high growth, fancy tech and AI stuff, but is there a particular sector or sectors that you like or don't like?
We're actually sector agnostic. It doesn't matter, as long as capable of understanding it. Simpler is better. Predictability is the number one thing. So that has tended to, we're quite keen on bricks and mortar rollouts, because if somebody has managed to got a business that can operate, say, 4 units, then you can have a higher degree of confidence that they might be able to do four more, and then four more, and then four more. The other reason why bricks and mortar rollouts can work is because they do need capital. You can be making quite a decent profit, but you haven't got enough cash, not if you want to expand. And we like to try and come in to help go to the level where if we invest, we'll be investing as probably the first or only institution. If it works, we'll aim to follow on. We shouldn't need any others. And we want to go to the level where the business can then afford to grow more with internally generated cash or borrow some money.
Yeah.
So that's the stage we're trying to get through. And we haven't only done bricks and mortar rollouts, but nonetheless, that illustrates the sort of business that we like to invest in.
Yeah, absolutely. And so besides the capital that you provide, do you have a team of people or yourself who mentors or guides the business owner on kind of what they need to do to actually grow and use your capital in the best way?
Well, yes, we're a small team. We don't like to promise what we can deliver, but we will always do what we can to add value. The truth is that varies according to the investee business. So some businesses will have a fully developed management team. Fantastic. Fine, we attend the board meetings, we're helpful, make introductions where we can. We've got plenty to say, but fundamentally, they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
In others, there may be particular gaps. Quite often, we're involved on advice on how we develop the business, the capital structure, can we raise debt, who can you raise it from, should you do another round, shouldn't you? Do you want to take some money off on a secondary? No. Don't sell. Why don't you go a bit further on the journey? Because look at the compounding effect. That's how you'll probably really make money out of your business. And we may get involved in analysis. We do quite a lot of work on location. What is the right location? We get involved in some of the marketing stuff. We may help with finding, on occasions, non-execs can be useful, or indeed just general advice about what's the best way to recruit and when and how much. All sorts of things.
Yeah.
We do what we can.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. So I'm a fractional CFO. So I'm often working with business owners and helping them understand their numbers, helping them make better decisions or make data-driven decisions rather than just guessing based on how much money is the banker. So what I'd be interested in understanding from you, from an investor's perspective, what are you often lacking in terms of visibility? Or is there anything that you lack in terms of visibility as to what's going on in these businesses that you invest in? Or do you make sure that they have the financial processes to make sure that you have visibility of what's going on?
It's a good point. I think we sometimes haven't got it right. You're quite right to point out, you guessed correctly, the number one area where there is either an opportunity for improvement or a need is in a financial area. And because we're at quite early stage businesses, even though they may be of a reasonable size, it's that discussion around seeing the financial resource as an asset that is going to make you money,
yeah,
not a cost. So we would always only invest now if we are confident that there is adequate financial systems and information and that there is somebody who is engaged to act as a finance director role. That may not be a full-time finance director, but it can be on a fractional basis. So sometimes that's in place. Sometimes there is a fractional. Sometimes working with the management will bring in a financial controller, and sometimes we'll bring in a fractional FD, and sometimes we'll need a full-time FD. But that's probably the number one place where you need to make sure that you're aligned on this is a necessary part of,
yeah,
scaling up a business, not an optional one.
Yeah. Preaching to the choir there.
Oh, yeah. That must be the answer that's sweet to your ears. But It is also true.
Yeah.
It is. I do understand, and I did it myself in the first place. One of our first businesses, we had lots of sales, we thought we were profitable, and indeed, maybe we were marginally, but we burned up a lot of cash because we didn't have good enough forecasting. And when you get into that position, it's very difficult to even get the reporting right, as well as to get yourself out of it. And we, like entrepreneurs I've worked with, would have been reluctant to make a big cash out, as the cost was seen, on getting that financial information correct.
Yeah.
But actually, you've got to have a business model that can sustain it.
Yeah, it's a really common thing that I hear is that, you know, revenue's good, business is good, but you actually look at the margins and they're half what they were a year ago. So you've made more revenue, but you've lost half of the profit. Or you make the same amount of profit, but double the work.
What you really want to be doing is predicting it and reacting appropriately on pricing and not selling something new in unless you're really sure about that pricing.
Yeah. And so one last question, how do you find the businesses that you end up investing in?
Well, we go out and look for them. So I know the whole industry is out there in corporate finance that is producing decks for people who want to raise money and then sending them out. Of course, that is a big industry. We rarely end up investing in a business where we receive the polished deck, because that's A, it's polished and it's what somebody wants to sell, not necessarily what we want to buy. It's competitive. We will tend to look at a sector where we think there are tailwinds. That looks like a good idea. We will tend to research who are the players of the right sort of size for us, business. And then we will try and call them up and see, would you like to have a chat? And quite often an entrepreneur, when approached by people who say, well, let's talk about the development of your business and how's it running? How do you make it bigger? Do you think you'll want any money, either for yourself or are you thinking about exiting? We'll be quite interested to engage in that conversation. And from there, we'll try and see if there is a business that we think would be good and they might be interested. And then we'll negotiate a deal. And if they are interested and we're interested, it's a win-win, then we'll try and move it forward. But it's something that we do ourselves by outbound more often than somebody who is seeking to raise money.
And when you say outbound, is that you doing out or your team doing outreach, or is that people you meet at events, introduction?
No, it's outreach. So we don't really do what everybody else does, which is network with each other. Nothing wrong with that, but we don't. We figured out first we wanted to be in the low-cost gym business, for example, because we'd studied the economics of the low-cost gyms. We liked it. So we then search and find how many small businesses there were, and then go and see 10 of them. And when you've seen 10 of them, you learn quite a lot.
Yeah.
And as is often the dynamic with this sort of stage of business, some of them are thinking of selling, some of them are thinking of expanding, some of them are wanting to acquire others. And you can form a view as to then what is the successful model and who's got that successful model and what do they want out of this? And can you help them to achieve that, either with success taking money off or getting an exit at a certain point or going on, as often as not, saying, you know, we're prepared to invest forever if necessary, as long as you want to, the entrepreneur. So you may be on a long journey. You might want to, we're comfortable with that if it's working.
Yeah.
That's fine because we don't have to return our money.
Good.
We don't consider it lost when it's invested.
Yeah. Okay, Jeremy, well, that was a really interesting conversation. Thank you very much for being a guest on the podcast. Well, what we'll do is we'll make it very easy for anyone who's interested to get in touch with you. We'll put a link to your LinkedIn profile and your website so that people can click through that. Is there anything else you want to share before we stop recording?
No, that's great. It was fun. Thanks for the call.
Good. All right. Thanks, Jeremy. All the
best. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for listening. As I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, this podcast was created to celebrate the success stories of seven-figure business owners, giving them a platform to share their insights and lessons learned in order to inspire other business owners. As well as that, it's an opportunity to build new connections. So if you're a seven-figure business owner or someone who works with seven-figure business owners and you're looking for introductions to potential stakeholders, strategic partners, and clients, I'd love to hear from you or have you on as a guest and see if I can help make those connections for you. Just go to synergycfosolutions.co. That's synergycfosolutions.co and click podcast. On that page, you'll find the link to apply.